Water is always a hot topic in many corners of this world, and it's certainly high on the priority list in the Southwest. What better way to find out what Tucson's water department is up to than to ask the man in charge of all the moving parts? Keep listening to hear about Tucson's new projects, including a $2.5 million annual water infrastructure incentive that will help some businesses pay for new water lines, and an exciting update on the Santa Cruz River Heritage Project. There's lots going on. Tucson Water, I call them the water innovators, and you'll learn why. I'm Gina Murphy-Darling, and we're going to get down to earth and learn more about just what Tucson Water is up to when it comes to managing the world's most precious resource, water, and why it matters. Thank you for joining us and for being a part of our world. And before we get into the show, two quick shout-outs. First is the sponsor of this show and great partner of Mrs. Green's World, Tucson Water. They've made a big commitment to our city and all of its citizens, and that commitment is to ensure that their customers receive high-quality water and excellent service in a safe, reliable, efficient, and environmentally responsible manner. Every single day, we all want our water to turn on when we touch the faucet. So this show is the first in a series of six shows where we have partnered with Tucson Water to feature their projects and many of their good works in our community. We're going to be hearing quite a bit more about that heavy lift in just a minute. But before I introduce our guest, an energy efficiency tip from another partner, Tucson Electric Power, and who doesn't want to be more energy efficient? And that's what this tip is about. You can reduce your water's heater temperature setting to 120 degrees as recommended by the National Safety Council. This will save some of the energy used to heat water for your washing machine, which you should wash in cold water if you ask me, and for your dishwasher while reducing the possibility of scalding. Great tip, but it will only work if you do it, and I hope you do. So now please join me in welcoming Tim Tomier, how did I do that? That was pretty good, Tim. Director of Tucson Water. It's really great to have you here again, and I am eager to hear what you have to say about a lot of the exciting things that you have going on. Your staff is really out there making some pretty important things happen, so thanks for taking the time to come up. Okay, I would like to start with a big question, and it's really about, you know, it's not about a particular, but you sit in that top seat. You really do, every day, and it is a big deal. What do you think the biggest challenges are that we face as a community in terms of water?
Well, thank you for having me here, and look forward to our conversation. The biggest question mark we have, or the biggest challenge that we face, is uncertainty with what the future might hold. We have planned and invested as a community to make sure we have a robust and resilient water supply. And we've done our best to estimate what the future might hold. We know things are going to be hotter. We suspect things are going to be drier. But how quickly those changes will come about and how well prepared we can be for those eventualities is really the biggest challenge, is not being overconfident in our positioning from a water supply perspective, but making sure we're always challenging our assumptions, pushing ourselves out of our comfort zone to make sure that we're asking the tough questions and having the tough conversations to make sure that we can make good on the promise that we have a resilient water supply.
And, you know, that really is a great answer, because you can't control the weather. That's the end game here. You can't. And with the erratic weather we've been having on a global scale, that's the big factor that you can't absolutely pin down. You can use projections and all that, so it makes perfectly good sense. But on to really good news. And there, you know, in preparing for the show, it reminds me how excited I am to be a part of the Tucson community. So back in February, the Tucson City Council backed a new $2.5 million water infrastructure incentive program. Tell us about the program and why it was needed. I know it was good news, but you can tell us why.
Absolutely. So the council passed the water infrastructure incentive to address two problems simultaneously. One is, how do we as a community attract and develop the economic engine that we need in order to raise our standard of living, to provide good jobs for our community and our citizens, while at the same time making sure that growth is done in a sustainable, especially from a water standpoint, manner. And Tucson is has a lot of things going for it. One of the things we have is a lot of land. We have a lot of land that, that is proper for commercial and light industrial development. Unfortunately, in many areas of the city where we have that land resource, and we may even have the logistics that make sense, like the interstate and the railroad, we don't necessarily have the water infrastructure in place.
Got it.
To be real attractive. So to businesses looking to locate here. So the water infrastructure incentive was intended to create an avenue whereby the city and the water utility can actually play a partnership role in bringing industry to town that could provide the high-paying jobs that we're seeking, and do it in a manner that makes us competitive with other communities, such that we can provide the incentive in order to overcome some of those barriers to access to water. It's not the quantity of water that we're lacking. It's really the ability to transmit it to these sites. So that's the water infrastructure incentive was designed to help close that gap. But it does come with some strings attached to it. And the strings in this case are important. Tucson definitely does not want to position itself to be at risk from a water supply perspective.
Right.
While we're attracting economic growth. So the strings that are attached to the incentive are that a company that wants to qualify for it and take advantage of it has to meet some sustainability criteria. And there's actually a menu of sustainability criteria that they can choose from. They have to meet three of items from three of the six buckets, if you will, that provide sustainability on either the jobs they're providing, the business that they're conducting, or the buildings that they're building. So for example, one way that a community could satisfy one of those criteria would be to build to a LEED, silver, or higher standard.
Got it.
There are criteria based on how they do their outdoor watering, whether it be met 100% through recycled water or through harvested rainwater. There's even incentives around alternative modes of transportation for their workforce. So it's really the city looking beyond just the water need and the money need in order to create economic development, but it's attracting the right type of economic development so that we're sustainable in the long term.
So the thing that I think of with, I just told you I came back from the Global Climate Action Summit, and it seemed to me that there were many, many, many big and small businesses that are on board with what those requirements would be anyway. Is that your sense? I mean, I know there's always the big bad corporation stereotype of we don't care, it's all about bottom line. But these were some pretty big companies that really do care about earnings per share, but they see the future and they know doing just what you outlined is important for all of us.
We have found that certainly the case. When we were developing the program, we wanted it to be challenging. We wanted it to be things that fundamentally move the needle from what is normally done to some higher standard, whether it's from an energy sustainability or water sustainability. And we were a bit concerned that would this still be an economic development tool? Are we overreaching here with what we're asking for? And the feedback we've gotten consistently is no. We're setting a new standard, but it's not a standard that many of these businesses aren't already holding themselves to.
Right.
They don't see it as a barrier. They see it as that's the right thing to do. And we want to be these businesses that want to site in Tucson, they have to have many reasons to do so. And one of the reasons is because Tucson is Tucson. It is a sustainable community. It has an active and engaged population that cares about the world,
truly,
the earth, water.
Truly.
And they want to be a part of that. So this has been viewed as a way to kind of encapsulate all of that ethic that we're seeing from large and small businesses. And they choose Tucson for that reason, among others.
So how has it been received so far? Is there a report card? I know it's a very short time in the big picture. It was only February. How's it going?
Well, it's actually, Tucson's been booming quite a bit lately. We've
like
seen a lot of...
Like, you go downtown, and you're like, if you miss 2 weeks, there's a new building up. I'm barely kidding. You go down there, and you're like, whoa, when did that happen?
Yeah, we have these things in the skyline called cranes. I don't know if you've actually... You may have seen them in, like, San Francisco or...
But they're
Seattle.
Everywhere.
They're in Tucson. Mm-hmm. We actually have them here.
It's so true.
The actual incentive, what we have found, is the businesses that are coming to Tucson... at this point and that are in the pipeline right now have already made their selection. They've already made their choice.
Got it.
So if they were to exercise the incentive, it would be just icing on the cake at this point. And so we haven't had anybody actually apply at this time. And what we're really looking at is now that that tool's in the toolbox and people are aware of it, what does the next year to 18 months look like with whether or not that'll actually have a measurable impact? So far, really, it's just been the overall energy and momentum of Tucson that's
exactly.
really had
it
people coming.
It helps with the branding of who we are and what we want to do. I mean, to me, it's a really bold and very sound move, mm-hmm. and we'll see what happens because it takes a while for these things to spin out, and they're just now in the pipeline.
That's correct.
Like I said, that's a really short time. So one of the things that... delighted me in doing the research, and thanks for your team for some of the important information that I don't think is generally available or top of mind to the public, nor to me. And it's about some pilot programs that you're doing. And when I said you're innovators, I don't say that lightly. You are innovators. So tell us about some of the projects. One of the things that excited me is the international flavor and how far-reaching this is globally with what you're doing. There are three pilots that I, from what I understand, and tell us about them. Like, I loved something called the Bookie Oren Global Water Technologies, which is a project with Israel. So tell us about the pilots.
Sure. One of the key initiatives we've had as an organization over the last 2+ years is to really not just talk about innovation, but create an environment where innovation is embraced, is fostered, and even create opportunities and challenges inside the utility to get those ideas flowing forward so that we actually do innovate. And so the three pilots we have going right now are all centered on technology. And you mentioned the Bookie Oren Global Water Technologies.
Yes.
And actually, Bookie Oren is an interesting character. He used to be the leader of Mekarot, which is the national Israeli water company. So he has started his own consultancy where his goal is to match up utilities with other utilities and or utilities with vendors on technology solutions. So... and he also wants to match up folks who have a similar challenge so that we're not on our own and,
right.
and reinventing the wheel 100 times across the globe. And it is across the globe that they do their searching. So it's an iterative process where we have a structured conversation about what our biggest challenges are. And then rather than sending one or two people from Tucson Water to a conference and see what that individual can
right,
learn.
Right.
We're actually casting a much broader net, which we're looking at all solutions from all across the globe, whether it's another utility that developed it or a vendor, and matching those solutions that are already out there to the problems we're facing. And if there is no solution that's been developed yet, create a little coalition of utilities who share the same challenge to go and tackle it together. So that's one of them. Our second one is the Digital Utility Group, which instead of being centered around a structured conversation, it's really an online portal to all the different technology solutions that are actually pre-vetted by engineers who aren't trying to sell you something.
Right.
So
right.
It's really looking at every piece of technology or technology solution based on its own merits, what it can and cannot do, such that when you match that matrix against what your challenge is, you're really honing in on the things that have the best potential for success, as opposed to saying, oh, I heard a talk from this vendor about this product. I'm going to see if that product works for me. No, it's taking our challenge, the thing we need, to the marketplace and having a warehouse of information to draw from.
So when you talk about, you know, give this for the mainstream, John Q. Public, that's me, or, you know, Joanna, I can be Joanna Public. When you talk about a technology solution, give an example of what that means. What are you looking at that you're going to use technology for that helps with the goal of clean, safe, reliable water? Does that make sense?
It does, and it can be almost anything you could imagine that goes into running our utilities. So we have to develop water supplies. We have to often treat them to drinking water standards or beyond. We have these things called emerging contaminants out there. It could be testing technologies so we can detect things in our water. It could be the treatment technologies themselves. Or it could be customer service. How do we treat you as a customer? How do you interact with us? Do you pick up the phone or do you send us an email? How many people would respond to having a Tucson Water app on their phone and being able to do things through their mobile device? So those are examples of things that we could look at that would help us be not just better at the core service we provide, but be a better customer service agency, and that citizens of Tucson and customers of Tucson Water have a much better experience working with us in their day-to-day lives. So the third pilot that we've mentioned is more of a tactical example of a technology. It's a company called Fracta, which has been around for a grand total of about 3 years now, which makes them ancient in technology circles.
Isn't that sad and true?
Oh my goodness. It's like, oh my gosh, you've made it through a holiday season and a summer. You must be doing okay. In their case, I'm going to throw some words at you. They use artificial intelligence and machine learning to help us analyze our pipelines. And really the goal is to try to hone in on certain types of our pipelines to find out where are they at most risk of a failure. We have main breaks every day, and that's always a challenge for us. There's inconvenience to the customer, there's some risk there, and there's of course the cost of repairing it. But the more proactive we can be and know where a break is going to happen before it happens allows us to take more proactive actions. And so we have a range of programs. There's really small pipelines where that's like a light bulb. It makes more sense to just let it fail and fix it when it happens. We have a really large pipelines that we take down periodically and we inspect directly. And then there's all the stuff in the middle. What Fracta allows us to do is compare all of our data about our pipelines along with all the things that could threaten a pipeline, the soils, the weather patterns, there's things called stray current from electricity. And not just our data, but compare our pipelines to all the other big water companies that have similar pipelines. And then they take that big data and they use AI and machine learning to run their proprietary analysis. And then they can come back with like a heat map of the city that says, this neighborhood is an area where you should be more concerned because there's all these factors that bring up the risk and you can go do something about that. And then there's areas of the community where, okay, we're in great shape. So again, these are all pilots. These are things we're trying out to see if they work, not just if they work in general, but do they work for Tucson? And so we're really excited and we're aggressive. We're doing these three pilots all before, they'll all be done before the end of 2018. And I've already warned everybody in the utility, we're going to do three more next year. So while we're working on these, be thinking about your next
pace
ideas.
Pace of the leader, pace of the team. And your team is busy and it's out there. So, Tim, these are three biggies. Before I move on, I want to ask about when you talk about machine learning. What does that mean?
Yeah, this is hopefully not the point where the robots take over. But it's... You can have a standard algorithm or program or spreadsheet that you've pre-programmed everything that it's supposed to do. And so you put in your data inputs and you've already told it what it should do with that data and come out the other end with the answer. That's fine. That's like a calculator. What machine learning is, as it runs through its analysis and the things that you're asking it to look at, it learns. It actually then can...
God, be kidding me.
It can sort out... what's more important and what's less important? Because when you compare what its predictions are to what you see in the field, it can learn from that and say, you know what? In Tucson, soils are more important than some other factor, or the opposite might be true. Without machine learning, we would just run the same thing over and over and get the same results. And yes, we would work through a prioritization that way. But with machine learning, the answer you get every time is better and more accurate and gives you better confidence that you're making the right investment.
So is it just data inputs? I mean, I am so far from being an engineer or that analytical mind. Is it the data inputs that are being processed and the artificial intelligence is putting the outcomes together differently? Or is it, you know, garbage in, garbage out? You're putting really great stuff in. How does that work? Does that question make sense? You see where my brain's going?
That question does make sense, because our traditional approach is garbage in, garbage out. And that's not a fault of that approach. It's just what
we have. Right, you just have to put a lot in. Yeah.
With big data, the analogy would be everybody's garbage in and better results out. So it will...
Got it.
It will improve your results. But the more data you have, the more... processing power you apply to it, you can actually turn garbage into something useful at the end of the day.
So it just blows my mind, because the technology, and I just a little aside, is adaptability on the part of the consumer and someone like me that has to be in a very tech-savvy world for just getting the word out there about our shows. And at this conference, I mean, going back to what you're doing, who thinks of these things? We had these little badges that if you connected with another person's badge, the information, all their contact information came back on my app. So I want to say to all our listeners, if you're not on the app page, get on it for everything, because it's just everything for that conference was on an app. I loved having handouts and writing on them and all that, but it's not the right way. So you're there. And here's my big question, and maybe you can't answer that. How do you decide on these three projects of the vast array? How do you hear about them? What's the process for picking three biggies?
Well, it's each of the three has its own story. And by the way, was this at the conference where you had the selfie with Al Gore?
I love you for bringing that up. Oh my gosh. I feel like such a goofball about it. But yes, I think he is the environmental champion of the planet. And that was one of my goals. And I can cross it off my list now.
And if he was wearing his badge at the time, you now know how to get a hold of him.
He was not wearing his badge. Well, and I might have had the nerve to ask him to click my badge. But it became quite a thing at the conference, because talk about cutting edge. Yeah. It's like, you know, people are saying, will you click your badge with mine? And then all of a sudden I have all these contacts on my app that I can then download to my Outlook with a push of a button. It's pretty exciting. So thanks for bringing that up.
Absolutely. So the pilots that we selected for this year were sort of director's prerogative, if you will. I do attend a lot of conferences. I have a lot of interactions with my network. And in all three of these cases, it started with a conversation. So it might not have been a badge clicking event, but it would have been either serving on a panel with some colleagues and really talking about what the challenges are. That led to a connection to Bookie Oren. It was also, in the case of Fracta, it's actually a consultant that we use routinely that knew we had an issue, and they went out and found a solution for it. Not that they're trying to sell it, but they're really trying to find out. Solve it. And that's what you want from a good consultant, is it's whether or not they have skin in the game is less important to them as in solving your problem. And so I'd like to feel that when we come out of the, especially the digital utility group and the Bookie Oren, is that it'll be much more tactical solutions that we are arriving at through the fact that we're doing the pilots. And but you have to have your eyes open, you have to have your ears open, and you have to be willing to share, in some cases, your vulnerabilities and the things that do worry you with your peers.
Right.
In order to find solutions. And a lot of people don't like to do that. They like to feel like I need to give off the appearance that I have everything under control. Trust me, we don't. We have most things under control, but then there are things that we just don't know or don't understand, and we can't be afraid to go out there and say, look, I need some help with this. And inevitably, you will find that help and you'll get connected.
Somebody's working on the solutions. That's what blew me away in doing research for this. There's so many good things happening because of technology. And if, you know, if everybody listening out there, if you press pause for a minute and think about the factors that you have to consider to do what your mission is and your commitment is to bring us safe, reliable water every single day, and the age of the equipment, and when is it going to break, and how much rain there is. I mean, I started trying to think of all the factors that could impact a pipe, a water break. I mean, and it's not just for old pipes. It's for if we have massive amounts of water in certain parts of town. And there's so many factors that it boggles the mind. Mm-hmm. So being able to have any kind of technology that can kind of help guide you with the miles and miles of pipe that you have to be mm-hmm. monitoring, good luck with that.
Yeah, there's 4,600 miles of pipe out there. And we keep an eye on about 90 of it directly. So what do we do with the rest of it?
Yeah. It's like I said, I keep using the word heavy lift, and I'm really happy to have you guys with boots on the ground taking care of my clean water. Another exciting area that's just so important to Tucson and our heritage, and I've lived here 43 years, so I care a lot about the vision for the Santa Cruz River Heritage Project, because I told you, I hear Joaquin, Morieta, Salvador talk about the Santa Cruz flowing again someday. So this project, I had to read the subheading twice when Candace sent me the research, Revitalizing Our Santa Cruz River with Recycled Water. I was like, what? So needless to say, I'm very eager to hear about the vision for that project that you're involved in.
Yeah, that's quite an exciting project for the community and for Tucson Water. It's the Santa Cruz River Heritage Project, and the Santa Cruz is Tucson, and Tucson is the longest continually cultivated area in the continental U.S. And the reason that's the case is because of the Santa Cruz River. And if you look at the Santa Cruz River today, unless you're on the north end of town, downstream of the wastewater treatment plants, you see a generally dry, relatively arid, maybe not the most attractive river.
Correct.
And it's a flood channel, and that is a useful application of it, but it's not its optimal application. If you go back not that long ago, 60, 80 years ago, maybe closing in on 100 years ago, it was a flowing stream. It actually at the base of A Mountain, right in the heart of downtown.
Long ago. You're right. It wasn't like it was 300 years ago.
It's in living memory, but not living memory for most.
Right.
And
right.
It's luckily after photography, we've got pictures of what the Santa Cruz River was and maybe could be again. So I mentioned earlier, the Santa Cruz River does flow today. It just flows at the north end of town and into Marana and into Pinal County. And that's because we do have the wastewater discharges from the wastewater treatment plants, the large regional plants that Pima County Regional Wastewater operates. And that, over time, has developed a riparian habitat. We have found endangered species. The Gila top minnow has actually returned to the Santa Cruz River in that location. And it in and of itself, it's valuable. The drawback of the current place where it flows is not very many people know about it.
And I know. It's not downtown, which is where we want it to
right.
be.
So the Heritage Project is we already have a recycled water system. We have reclaimed water that we deliver throughout the community. And we actually have pipelines. We have infrastructure that go through downtown. And we have the ability to tap into that and actually make the conscious decision to discharge recycled water to the Santa Cruz River near the downtown area in order to bring all those benefits we see further north right into the heart of the community where Tucsonans can enjoy them directly, maybe reconnect the community to the river in a way that most that live here now have not had that connection in the past. And also, we do it to recharge the aquifer through the downtown area and store that water for the future. So the Heritage Project has many benefits associated with it. Water management, riparian habitat, all of that being compatible with flood control. And so we're very excited about where we're at with that project. And we're sometime in 2019, targeting Memorial Day, we would have what looks like a very natural spring.
You're kidding.
In the Santa Cruz River near Silver Lake Road and water flowing downstream.
That is just so affirming to me. It's so exciting. And, you know, I'm a loop rider, bike rider, and it is a treasure. Every time I ride on the loop, I thank Tucson, all the partners, and I mean, I love it. And this will be an area where we can ride our bikes down there and see that part of it. I mean, it will really be a delightful thing. So it impacts habitat. It will definitely impact tourism. The loop brings people. I have people all the time stopping me and asking me which way is something because they came here to ride on the loop.
The economic impact of recreation, whether it's ecotourism or bike riding in Tucson, is hard to measure, and it's profound. And when we can marry those things up and create a better habitat and a better environment for that to occur, especially in the downtown area, where we're trying to attract both people and businesses, really does make sense. It also coincides with where the modern streetcar loops to the west side of downtown, where a lot of development's occurring already. And I'm assured that the loop will be about 10 degrees cooler with flowing water next to it. So
I'm going to move where I ride my bike because, I mean, the last time I went out, I just said to my biking buddy, Terry, I said, I can't do it.
I'll see you in November.
Okay, that's exactly right because it's hot. And I usually do 25 miles. I did 10. I said, I can't do it. So anyway, so our last question is, so the project status, the next steps, they're moving forward with that project. And I can't wait to have you back to hear the updates on that. You really do have a vision for Tucson Water. And your staff has said it. And I mean it when I say pace of the leader, pace of the team. You're out there pushing us, pushing them, getting us to where we need to be and where we all hope we can be. Lots of pieces are becoming a reality. And I want to close with a question that many people in Tucson ask or are concerned about. And that's, how are we doing putting all of this show together and everything you shared? And you really did kind of answer it, but how are we building a future for Tucson where we know we'll have an adequate water supply? So it's other than controlling the weather, you know, my answer would be, if I was sitting here, it's because people like you are preparing for it and doing really concrete things, and that gives me, as a consumer, confidence. But what would your answer be?
Well, thank you for that. It's certainly we're standing on the shoulders of those who've came before, and actually it's the entire community of Tucson. So in order to have water reliability, there's at least two sides to that coin and a mosaic of things that happen on both sides. But the two main sides are providing, making sure we have enough water, and we're doing an excellent job with that. And then the consumer using that water wisely.
Yes,
and Tucson is
to bring that
so
up.
Well known for that.
Right.
And so on both sides of that coin, we've done remarkable things. On the resource side, we have a large allocation of Colorado River water. We know that the Colorado River is in drought. We know that a shortage is imminent. But we've not only been using that water, we've been storing that water for the future. So we've got years of water stored locally in our aquifers that's protected and controlled for the future. So we've got a big supply on the front end. And then on the conservation side, the demand management side, it's worth noting that even with 200,000 more people in Tucson today than there were in the mid-1980s, we use the same amount of potable water as a community.
Blows my mind.
So
blows my mind.
When you can take that curve of demand and bend it downward while growing, which we've done in Tucson, and you make sure you have a robust water supply that you actually control locally and you store locally, you have the recipe for resiliency.
What a great answer. I mean, it gives me confidence because it's a fear that we don't have to have. That's how I feel. When you see everything that's going on, people are being forward-thinking and making sure that we're all safe and taken care of. This was a great show, and I thoroughly enjoyed having you here and your answers to my questions. And everybody, we have two other great shows coming up next week. Peter Bick is an amazing filmmaker at ASU. He has a series of films called Carbon Cowboys and Common Ground. he is just finding middle ground, doing amazing things with farming and farmers. And it, you'll love the show. And then our Down to Earth show on October 3rd is Jolie Bracamonte, Employing Our Veterans, an Arizona Roadmap, another social justice issue that we can care about a lot at Mrs. Green's World. So thank you, Tim. It was great. Everybody make it a great green day. Water, use it wisely. That's our part in it as consumers, because we really matter. So thank you. It's been a great show.
Thank you very much, and I love your parting message.